Welcome in, everybody, to another Sleeper Wire show here. I am your host, Steven Speck-Rotelli, and joined with me today is Jason Watson and George Reed. And with us, back again, surprisingly, we must have did something right the first time, but very special guest, Mark Schofield is back. We're going to talk about some quarterback situations post-draft. You guys heard all of us. Well, Jason, you weren't on that one. Rob was pre-draft with the rookie show, but without further ado, let's jump into it. I'm going to hand it over to our guest. And Mark, how you doing, man?
Well, I was promised snacks. I mean, that's why I came back. I was told there were going to be snacks. I didn't see any snacks. I'm a little disappointed.
I thought Steve was going to get him. I thought that's what took so long.
No.
Oh, no. He had something else to do. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But no, guys, I'm happy to be back. It was such a blast the first time. I'm excited to talk some landing spots, some quarterback stuff. Get into, you know, Buccaneers legend Tom Brady and what we can expect from him and his, you know, new teammate Rob Gronkowski. But excited to be here, ready to rock.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And George, how you doing today, buddy?
Sir, I'm doing really good, actually. You actually pronounced my last name. I know Reed was very difficult the last time, you know, we actually got together and whatnot. And I see you've been practicing on the side. Good job. I'm impressed.
Man, I've been doing that for like 2 weeks now. So at least that.
If you're spending two weeks on that, wow.
Hey, you know, practice makes perfect, right?
Absolutely.
Jason, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm just wondering how you guys didn't get snacks. I must have got them all. And I'm the only guy without a camera here, but if you could see me, I do look like a guy who would have had all the snacks.
You probably got a sandwich hanging out of your mouth right now.
Oh, no, they don't hang out long. It's just like I one-throat them. They're just in and out and done. They're just gone.
Years of practice, apparently.
On sandwiches.
But anyways, before we dive into this, go on Twitter, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. Make sure you're following the Sleeper Wire Show at Sleeper Wire Show. You can follow our host, Mark, at Mark Schofield. Jason at BFTG Jason, George at BFTG Pod, and myself at SPAC21. So before we kind of dive into all this, I kind of want to get everybody's thoughts just briefly on how the draft went. Obviously, you know, it was virtual this year given the COVID situation and all that. Personally, I thought it went fairly well considering the situation. It was interesting to see the involvement of the commissioner throughout the whole thing. I mean, Mark, what was your insight on it?
Well, I thought it was really well done by the league. A lot of us, you know, we sort of expected that there were going to be hiccups along the way. You know, when we heard that the league ran their sort of virtual draft on the Monday before, we were hearing stories about teams timing out, Wi-Fi going out. But it came off relatively without a hitch, and so well so that I was on – I was on a radio station in Toronto the Saturday of the draft. So this is right before day three started. And they asked me if I believed the conspiracy theory that they had recorded the first round in advance so they would make sure there was no mistakes. And that took me wildly by surprise. It was the first I had heard something like that. But the fact that some people thought that there was a possibility that they recorded it ahead of time to make sure there were no mistakes tells you how good the NFL did at it. You know, obviously, look, they really hammered home a lot of for lack of a better phrase, the human side here. I mean, there were a lot of like painful memories from prospects from their past that they really sort of drove home. But I think for the most part, I'm glad they did it. I think it was well done, and I'm happy they went ahead and did it.
Yeah, I agree, especially too because you had a couple of the analysts over from NFL Network join in too, and everybody kind of worked together on all that. And, you know, we know we didn't have Todd McShay this year, so obviously there was a familiar face missing. But, yeah, I thought it was pretty well done as well. I mean, George, what was your take on it?
So circling back a little bit, touching on what Mark said about how they were going into some of these players' backstories, I don't know if the NFL – ask permission to air that stuff publicly. If they didn't and they just decided to, hey, I'm going to throw out, you know, this person's mother was killed because of cancer, you know, 6 weeks ago and whatnot, I think it was something they should not have done. If they asked permission and the players that were being drafted was like, yeah, I'd have no problem with, you know, with you airing that part of my backstory, kudos to the NFL. I think if it was me, I don't think it would be something I would want aired on national TV. But if they ask permission first, I don't have any problem with it. To the actual draft itself, Jason and I were doing a live show during the draft, so we didn't get to hear all the announcements. We got to, you know, kind of watch it on mute, basically. But I thought it was well done from what I could see on the TV. Like, they really didn't have any hiccups. I thought they were having issues at first because it took so long for the Bengals to get on the clock. Like, I think it was like 16 or 17 minutes before they actually started the countdown that they were on the clock. But outside of that, I thought it was very well done. And I think what we're going to see going forward is they may do this again, because all these GMs and scouts and all that learned that they can spend more time at home with their family and still do, you know, an NFL draft versus having to report into work and spend 12, 14, 16, 18 hours a day at work preparing for an NFL draft. I don't think that they'll have to do that anymore. Like, maybe still go in, maybe hold the draft live someplace, but I don't think you're going to see, and I hope they don't, all these draft experts and scouts and players or coaches and whatnot spending 16, 18 hours a day in the office leading up to the draft. I hope, you know, they've shown that we can do just as good of a job without having to spend, you know, this much time away from our family.
Yeah, I'm sure some of it will get integrated in. I mean, the live aspect of it, obviously you have the fans, the commissioners there, the players, so on and so forth. But as far as all the behind-the-scenes work and all that stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if some of that gets filtered in. But, I mean, we'll see what happens in the 2021 draft. But what were you thinking, Jason?
Well, don't you think this is kind of like a built-in excuse for those who swung and missed? Like, we didn't get to go through our normal process. We didn't get to filter out guys because we didn't get to meet with them as much face-to-face. You don't have you don't have a player in for as many hours. So you're literally getting, you know, 15, 20 minutes on a Skype call. So you're not putting them in a pressure situation to know how they react, whether they react well or poorly to hours and hours of discussion. Like, I think it's a built in excuse for some of these teams. As far as the draft goes, I think it was really well done. I do think at moments, especially with the commissioner, it was pretty well awkward. I think at some point his pelvis was higher than his head in the chair. Like, I don't know how that happens, but like, by the end of the thing, he was like exhausted and his legs were up higher than his head. And you're like, man, what are you doing? We're not done yet. There's cameras still on you. But overall, I think it was really well done, even though I think the commissioner was just a little bit awkward, you know, talking about the M&Ms, trying to make jokes. It seemed like a robot trying to act like a human at some point, right? Like, just trying to reach out to the audience and connect a little. And I didn't, like, man, they need a commissioner who's got a little better TV presence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The way I looked at it is, man, it was something to do with sports. I mean, I love the NFL draft, but something to do with sports, regardless of the whole situation. It was done pretty well. And they gave everybody something to look forward to. That's what I enjoyed the most.
Listen, if they replayed it tomorrow, I'd probably watch it. Especially the first round, I would probably rewatch the whole thing, because right now there's just a lack of sports, except for the Michael Jordan documentary, which is amazing. But yeah, like, if they put the first round of this draft, even though I know everything that happened, back on, I would probably watch every hour of it.
Fair enough. So,
I got a question for you. Mark, I made a comment when we were doing me and Jason were doing our little show, that every year in the draft, there's a holy crap moment. Like, somebody takes somebody you just did not see and or a huge reach. And typically that's when the draft actually starts, where it starts going away from chalk. What was your first this year for you? What was the first holy crap moment, or wow, that actually really surprised me?
I think probably when the Raiders went with Ruggs over the other two receivers.
Yeah.
100%. I think for most people, if they had gone Lamb there, or if they had gone Judy there, they would be like, okay, like, there's an argument that guy's, you know, the best receiver in this class. I think most people had either Lamb or Judy one or two, or in some order. You know, so when they went Ruggs there, I think that was a bit of a shock for most. Not that Ruggs is a bad receiver, not that he's not a fit for what the Raiders are going to do offensively, but it's just, you know, we expected one of those two guys to be one of the to be the first receiver off the board. So I think that was a bit of a shock. You know, I think at 18, when the Dolphins went with Austin Jackson, a lot of people just assumed that that was going to be Josh Jones or maybe another tackle. Austin Jackson coming off the board as that sort of fifth offensive tackle caught a lot of people by surprise. Obviously, look, the Jordan Love situation with Green Bay trading up to draft Jordan Love. I was on with Matt Waldman and Sigmund Bloom, and when that pick was made, like, we went 0-60 in the blink of an eye. Like, before the next pick was even made, we had Rodgers in New England, like, for next season. Like, I mean, we just went off the rails at that point. And of course, look, we had been on for 2 hours together at that point, and Sigmund and Matt had been on for hours before that. So, yeah, kind of went off the rails there. And I think, look, Seattle with Jordan Brooks. A lot of people liked Jordan Brooks, the Texas Tech linebacker, thought he had some promise. By most indications, he was probably a day two guy. Like, I'm looking at Arif Hassan's sort of consensus board, and Jordan Brooks by the consensus big board was the 84th ranked player, according to everybody's big boards that Arif assembled. And he comes off the board at 27. And so that was a bit of a shock too. But I think the first one was Ruggs, because that's what it's like, okay, like, everything's pretty much going the way we thought. You know, Burrow at one, Yon at two, Okudah at three, like, that's really chalky. You know, Thomas at four, maybe a little bit of a surprise, but not really. You know, Tua at five made sense. You know, Herbert at six, we sort of expected that. Derek Brown at seven, okay, we kind of expected that. Simmons at eight, yeah, okay, that works. You know, C.J. Henderson at nine, yeah, that makes sense. Cleveland going tackle, that made sense. So, yeah, it all really sort of fit until that Ruggs pick.
Yeah, the one that I was kind of – I honestly had Justin Jefferson pegged to go to Philly too.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was such a good fit for Philly.
I know perfect. Not that Rieger won't.
Yeah, not that Rieger won't. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Jalen Hurts. I've got some revised thoughts on what Philly's doing offensively that we can get to that might make, you know, Rieger a better fit for what they're doing. But partly it's my Jefferson bias. Like, I absolutely love that kid, and I think he's in a perfect spot in Minnesota. Like, for what they do offensively, what they're going to ask him to do, like, I think it's ideal for him. But I prefer Jefferson to Jalen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those guys will see immediate opportunity there.
Yeah.
So let's dive into all this, man. Let's look at this whole quarterback situation. We'll talk about some names that are still out there and where some of these rookies landed, so on and so forth. And I mean, first and foremost, we're still looking at the whole, when will Dak sign in Dallas? Do we expect him to play this year? I mean, they signed Andy Dalton to a one-year deal up to $7 million. Not that that's really saying a whole lot, but I mean, it's $3 million base salary. I think they just wanted to replace the red hair of Jason Garrett there with him. But I mean, Mark, what are your thoughts on this whole situation? I mean, where do you see – do you see Dak getting that big contract anytime soon? And is he going to play this year?
Yeah, I think he plays this year. I think they come to an extension. You know, I don't know if soon is the right word, because obviously there's a bit of time here. It's not like there's an immediate deadline. But I do think they work out a long-term extension. I think the acquisition of Dalton, they're a team that knows perhaps better than anyone that you need a plan B at quarterback in today's NFL. Like, if you look at how their season ended, Dak was maybe 65% down the stretch for them. Like, he was really banged up. And you watch their game against Philly, a must-win game for them to sort of lock the division up and knock Philly out of the playoffs. Dak wasn't making throws. Like, he couldn't make throws. He couldn't with that elbow injury that he had. And so if you have a guy like an Andy Dalton at 100%, he's probably giving you more than Dak Prescott at 65%. You know, and obviously, look, Dak Prescott's career started when Tony Romo got hurt. So they know you need to upgrade at the backup quarterback spot. Dalton is Prescott insurance. Like, don't I saw Eagles fans get the takes off that Dalton was coming to take Dak's job. And yeah, it's funny on the timeline at all.
That's not happening.
It's Dak's job. They're going to get a deal done. You know, whether it happens, say, the next month, the next 2 months, I'm not sure. But they're going to figure this out.
Yeah, I could see it totally going down the road that it went with Zeke, probably very parallel to it. I mean, what are your thoughts, Jason?
Well, so I was going to ask, do you think it's over under? I think Vegas right now has it at 34 a season. So are we doing over or under 34 a season? It'll make him roughly the richest quarterback per season. Rumors are he turned down 31.
See, I thought the latest that he turned down was 33. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
So, but what do you think, Mark, George? What do you think? Over, under 34?
Can I push? Can I take a cop out and push?
No.
No.
Unacceptable.
Then I'll go under.
I'm going to go over. I mean, it's looking like, at least according to this Bleacher Report article I pulled out from March, that the offer was like 33. He would average $33 million a season. That's supposedly the one he turned down. Paying Dak Prescott $35 million sounds like a ton of money, and it is a ton of money. But what else are they going to do? I'll go over there.
I'm going over too.
Yeah, I would go over that. I mean, they're kind of forcing their hand. I mean, they've literally put an entire offense around him. He is surrounded by all kinds of people. I mean, adding CeeDee Lamb to what they already had is just absolutely insane. So they're gonna have to figure out a way, and I expect him to play and to get all that done. I mean, yeah, Dalton, I mean, you could go back, you know, talking to your point. You know, they're the prime example of needing a backup quarterback. I mean, you go to the days of Tony Romo, too, you know, yeah. I mean, the seasons that he played through. And then either middle of the season or end of the season, he would just go down, even if they were on a playoff run, and then they would need somebody to step in and, you know, make something happen. Moving on from that, Cam Newton, still a free agent, even after the draft here. I haven't even seen any rumblings of anything. Recently, you know, some teams that kind of stick in my head right now, and it just all depends on if they really believe in their quarterbacks that they have. But I mean, the Raiders possibly, maybe the Jags, you know, I see Cam Newton, as long as he can, holding out for a possible starting job. But, you know, does somebody like Pittsburgh take a shot on him? I mean, Ben's coming back from that elbow injury. Is he willing to go to a team like that? Because if Ben goes down, you know, he's at least, you know, in a situation where he could be on a winning team. I mean, George, I'm going to kick this to you first. What are your thoughts on Cam?
So there was a lot of rumblings that, at least pre-draft, that there maybe he would go to New England. And we discussed that with Mark on the last time we had him on. And we don't think New England was actually going to be an option for Cam. I'm honestly not sure where he's going to sign. If I had to guess a place for him to go, a place where I think he would fit in, at least on a one year deal as a backup, I'm thinking the Texans, to be honest. I think go to the Texans behind Deshaun Watson. If he gets hurt, as far as the Texans go, they're not losing a whole lot. Cam's still a mobile quarterback. He's not as mobile as Deshaun Watson, but I mean, he's not a statue back there. He could still move around a little bit in the pocket. And he does have the experience. You know, he's a former NFL MVP. He's taken the team to the Super Bowl. You know, something I think would be good for them.
What are your thoughts, Jason?
Man, the market really dried up after the draft, didn't it?
It did.
It did.
And you know, rumors were out there that he doesn't want to go anywhere if he doesn't have the chance to start. So, like, the number of teams that don't have starting quarterbacks at this point where they think are better than Cam Newton, really, really low. So, like, it would be New England or bust. I could see him trying at Pittsburgh as a backup because they still have Duck Hodges? They didn't do anything, and we saw how bad it was last year without Ben. If Ben's shoulder isn't – if he's not right, man, they're in a world of hurt again this year, wasting the talent they have on that roster. So having and you know, rumors were that they were trying to sign somebody like Jameis Winston. So it would make sense that they would look for a qualified backup. But again, it's a backup role with the possible option to start. You know, there's not a lot of spots out there for a Cam Newton to start right now. And I don't know, maybe he just goes into the season and waits for somebody to get hurt and says, hey, remember, I'm out here.
Yeah, it's really hard to say how that'll go. I mean, that's what I said. The only places I think that he would have a legitimate shot to maybe start. That's why I just threw out the Raiders and the Jags because, you know, I don't know. The market has dried up big time. I mean, Mark, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that Pittsburgh at this point is probably the best opportunity for him. There's not, unless a starter gets hurt here in the offseason, like there's like some sort of freak accident, or I don't know, a starter gets COVID. And there's a situation where we don't know if that guy's going to be ready to go. I mean, we are living in strange times. I mean, Adam Schefter sort of defended the Jalen Hurts pick by teams might want to have two quarterbacks because of COVID. So who knows? Crazy things can happen. Absent a situation like that, there's not a starting job out there. Teams have their guys. The only situation might be Pittsburgh in that you've got a 38-year-old quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger coming off of Tommy's arm surgery. And apparently his workouts have been drinking beer, playing golf, and doing some yoga. Like, I'm not sure he's going to be A, in game shape anyway, because he does look like, you know, Yukon Cornelius from Rudolph.
He does have a solid beard going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're all living the quarantine life. I get it. But, man, I mean, come on.
So he looks more Matt Patricia than Ben Roethlisberger at this point.
Yeah, it's he's got a whole situation going on. So, I mean, and the rest of their quarterback room, like you said, Mason Rudolph, Devlin Hodges, Paxton Lynch, and JT Barrett. Like, they have a talented roster. Like, that's a team that can compete. And they had a shot at the playoffs, but they had just awful quarterback play between Rudolph and Duck, Devlin Hodges. Cam Newton could keep you afloat and win games for you. So I think Pittsburgh still makes the most sense.
So I thought of a spot that is probably in worse quarterback situation than Pittsburgh after the starter. Washington. They got Dwayne Haskins, yeah. Kyle Allen. Who else do they have there?
Detroit's probably worse if Stafford were to go down.
I mean, Washington is bad because you've got Haskins and Allen. Then you've got Steven Montez, who, like, I don't even think he was draftable. And he wasn't drafted. He was a free agent. And then Alex Smith. I mean, I don't think you can count on Alex Smith. I mean, we all probably just saw that Alex Smith special. Ooh, like, I don't know.
Brutal.
Yeah. So I don't think you can really count on him. You might not be sold on Haskins. Are you really thinking Kyle Allen is the answer? Not that Washington's going to compete, but it's not a great quarterback room. George is right there. And obviously there's a level of familiarity between their head coach and Cam Newton. So maybe that's a spot for him too. That's a good call.
Yep.
Yeah, could be. Definitely could be.
If you're in Washington and you're trying to figure out what Haskins is, do you want the pressure of Cam Newton as being a backup though?
That's also a very good point, because if you bring in Cam Newton, like – look, Washington's ready to run Dwayne Haskins out of town anyway. I mean, look, FedEx Field's down the street from me. I mean, between the situation at the end of the Lions game where he's taking selfies at the end of the game before the game's over.
Which was hilarious.
But DC Radio's just ready to run that dude out of town already. I thought he was getting better down the stretch, but no, it looks like it's a shaky situation. And yeah, you have Cam Newton staring over your shoulder. That's kind of tough.
I could be mistaken, but this isn't the same – front office and head coaching staff that drafted Haskins, right?
No, so it's a different regime.
Yeah, so there's no loyalty there. It's not like, they came in and said, hey, you know, this is the guy we want. This is the guy we want to build around. That's absolutely not there. So,
yeah. I mean, so and there was some speculation that rather than Chase Young at two, maybe Washington trades out and drafts a quarterback at two, because, you know, we saw it a year ago with Arizona. They had drafted Josh Rosen early, but they said, no, new regime. We want our guy. We're going to draft Kyler.
Yep.
So there was the shot that could happen. So like you said, maybe there's a chance that they said, you know, Dwayne's not our guy. We didn't draft him. So we'll see.
Yeah, that definitely didn't even think about it that way. It's actually not a bad point. So we'll move on from that. Jameis Winston, you know, is another guy that we talked about in the last show. He landed in New Orleans, a one-year deal. I mean, that's kind of an ideal spot for him, realistically. Being in a division that he's familiar with, but he's sitting behind Drew Brees as well. I'm just kind of wondering how that's going to play out with Taysom Hill, you know, given, you know, for lack of better terminology, invested in him and how what they tendered him with and so on and so forth. And, obviously we don't want to see it come to that situation where Brees is gone. I'd really like to see a full year out of him with that team and see if they can make another run at another title. To me, if for where he is in his career, the things that he's done, it's an ideal landing spot in my mind. I mean, what are your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I think this is the best sort of scenario for Jameis Winston. Like you said, he's going to the Harvard of quarterbacking, right? He's going to get a chance to learn under Sean Payton, a chance to learn from Drew Brees. You know, obviously he's had some struggles with decision-making and turnovers and he'll get a chance to sort of learn and observe and watch. And, you know, if he does have to play, say something happens to Breeze, you've got some weapons there. You've got Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. You've got Alvin Kamara. You've got Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, there's an opportunity where you will have to – you can step in and you won't have to do a ton. I mean, look what happened last year when Breeze went down. Teddy Bridgewater steps in. He doesn't have to do a ton. They're running the ball. He's throwing screens. He's checking the ball down. They win every game he plays, and he parlays that into a huge deal. And so Winston could be in a situation where if he has to play, got weapons around him, he could have a similar type of run that Bridgewater does. And who knows? Maybe he's the Patriots' starting quarterback in 2021.
I would love that.
Do you really want that to happen?
No, I don't. But I mean, I've got to throw
it out there. It is crazy. He went from 31 million on a franchise tag to Tom Brady going to Tampa and him signing for 3 million. Just crazy how fast that fell. I think Marcus Lattimore won the internet today.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
He posted that, just so you know, I'm not one of your receivers anymore. I'm actually on your team now, which means you won't be throwing me the ball anymore.
Nice.
Welcome to the team.
I kind of agree with what Mark said. That, like, if you look what Bridgewater did last year, where, as Mark said, Breeze got hurt, Bridgewater came in, filled in, great form, you know, won 5 games, probably should have won 6. I think Drew Breeze should have sat out the game right before the bye week, but he didn't. He watched Bridgewater parlay that into a starting job somewhere with a nice big contract for a couple of years. I think Winston is hoping to do the exact same thing, whether or not he actually has to fill in for Drew Brees or not. Like, he's going to go sit down and be in the same quarterback room with Drew Brees. He's, you know, top 5, in my opinion, all time at the quarterback position.
Oh, yeah.
He's got Sean Payton. You know, it's a win for him, and he probably will parlay this into another contract somewhere next year, because there's going to be a coach out there that says he's a former number one overall pick. I can take him and I can, you know, I can turn him into something. I can correct his vision, basically, and decision making. So he's going to get another contract next year. I'm fully confident on that. And I think it was a smart move by Winston to go to New Orleans for a year.
It's
even for 3 minutes.
It's hard to say, though, because, I mean, say just, you know, just hypothetical, huge hypothetical. Saints win, Breeze decides to retire. Does he stay there? You know what I mean? And the quarterback market's not going to be as hot next year as it was this year. You know, especially if Brady does play out 2 years. You know, is Rivers going to play another year in Indianapolis? You know, there's going to be a window here soon where the quarterback market's going to be very hot again. I just don't see that window being next year. And I guess we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, speaking of Brady, before we jump into that, going back, I don't know why this just popped in my head, but we were talking about the draft earlier. Man, Mark, how about your head coach over there? I thought that guy stole the show during the draft. Guy's dog was just sitting in his chair. The camera would go over to him. He'd just be gone. Wouldn't even be in the room.
I mean, look, there is so much great content from draft weekend, but nothing tops Nike sitting in the chair. It just made it made my job easy. I mean, before they picked the kicker at 159, I tweeted out that picture with, I'm just getting ready for Nike to pick Rodrigo Blankenship, the kicker from Georgia. And they picked the kicker. It was just not the kicker I thought. Right. When they drafted a linebacker from Wyoming that I literally had never heard of, like, certainly not on any consensus board. Like, there was an actual good linebacker from Wyoming, Logan Wilson, in this draft. They drafted Cash Marsh. You look him up on ESPN, there's not even a picture of the guy. It's like they drafted a Twitter egg. And I'm just like, Nike, you drafted the wrong Wyoming linebacker. Like, Nike was the star of the – Belichick was on the schedule release show tonight with Rich Eisen. And Eisen asked him about Nike, and he said Nike's getting ready, working on the supplemental draft. So Belichick's rolling with it. And people have said they should change the logo. They should change the Patriots logo instead of Pat Patriot to Nike. And I'm all for that. I mean, Belichick's girlfriend, Linda, she was on Adam Schefter's podcast talking about how, you know, Belichick walked away from the camera Nike jumped on because he jumped in the chair because he saw some treats on the table. And Bill's like, hey, look at that. Look at that. This is a great picture. And that's right when the league cut to the image of Nike there. I mean, it was just great. And look, that's why, you know, circling back to the draft a bit, that's why this draft was awesome. You had moments like that. You had whatever was going on in Mike Vrabel's house. Like, I mean, I don't know what was going on.
I'm trying to forget that, okay?
Yeah. And then you had that other scene where, like, this couple walks out of a back room and, like, she's, like, fixing her hair and he's putting his shirt back on. And it's like, all right, like, we get it. Like, happy times for you. It was just, you know, he had a lot of those kind of moments, but I don't think anything tops Nike.
I mean,
Cliff Kingsbury's
And we need.
Dude, him and Sean McVay had some solid houses there.
We need the next Bond to be Cliff Kingsbury. Because that's a Bond pad right there. I mean, that's a street game.
Absolutely, it is.
And the villain needs to be Jerry Jones, who literally was Le Chief on a yacht. Like, I was waiting
that
for
was
a
impressive.
Tear of blood. So I need Cliff Kingsbury, Jerry Jones, your next Bond villain. That has to happen.
So let me ask you, if you're Jerry Jones and you got that big old yacht just parked off the side of the Gulf of Mexico there in Texas, do you not draft from your yacht? Why do it at the house? Why not do it on the yacht? That's what I would do.
It's a $250 million yacht. I bet you his IT guy would have rather been there. Like, some of them were like shacked up in Winnebagoes and shit, and they're in GM's driveways. You know,
different female assistants on different.
I mean,
days
look, Jerry's just living the dream. I mean, the guy goes everywhere in style. Now, Indianapolis, Indiana is not exactly, you know, the like place to be, right? But you go there for the combine and what do you see? You see Jerry's massive luxury coach. Like, you walk downtown, you go to St. Elmo's, there's the bus. Jerry's here tonight. You go to Steak and Shake late night. Oh, Jerry's here. Like, everywhere the guy goes in style. But if it were me, I would not leave that yacht, like, ever. I'd just be like, look, I'm here.
I wouldn't need a house.
We're going to die here. I'm fine. Yeah.
Probably would.
Oh, he's got the best. He's got the best COVID setup for sure. Like, he's not getting it at all. If he wants to stay socially distant, that guy's good.
Probably what sealed the deal with the pick too is, you know, seeing CeeDee Lamb's hands where he was grabbing his side chick phone away from his girlfriend sitting next to him. Even though he took the Twitter and said that it's not what it looked like.
That was some quick process and speed there, man.
I'm gonna toot my own horn just a little bit, and I normally don't, but I called that CeeDee Lamb pick to Dallas. When Dallas was on the clock, they asked who we thought Dallas was going to pick. And I said, I said, Jerry Jones is going to make a splash. He wants something flashy. He's taking Lamb. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
That was such a good pick for them.
God, that wide receiver core is going to be scary, man.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Jumping back to our quarterbacks here. Obviously everybody knows that Brady landed in Tampa Bay, but it's just kind of funny how quickly the process with Gronk happened and him coming back to the game and him going to Tampa Bay. You know, Tampa Bay added to the offensive line and added Keyshawn Vaughn to the backfield. So that they really did kind of cater that draft. They did pick up Antoine Winfield and added a couple pieces to the defense, but they really kind of catered that draft to them or to the offensive side of the ball and obviously going to make a really big push. And I still really want to see how this is going to work out. I mean, Tom Brady, he's an alpha on the field and, you know, Bruce Arians system. So I really want to see how this is going to work out, how that marriage is going to work between those two. So Mark, I'm going to kick this to you first. You know, with him there, obviously Gronk's back, all the things I just talked about. So what are you seeing going on in Tampa right now?
Yeah, ED, I think it's going to be like a massive, situation here. Look, you've got Gronk, which is huge. You look at Tristan Wirfs, the offensive tackle they drafted. I think you could sort of slot him in as their right tackle in week one. That's obviously going to be a passing game now where he's got weapons like he didn't have last year. And the additions they made to the defense, I think specifically Antoine Winfield Jr., are huge for a defense that, you know, down the stretch last year was one of the better defenses in the league. Like, you look at DVOA final five games, they were a top five defense. And so, you know, the NFC South is obviously going to be a bit of a difficult division. You've got New Orleans that looks to be good again. Atlanta's made some nice moves, I think, in this offseason, although people sort of question the AJ Terrell pick. Yeah, we're probably waiting for Carolina to be really competitive. But I think of all the teams that have really helped themselves the most, Tampa Bay is probably in that conversation in terms of teams that have helped themselves the most this offseason. Because you are add arguably the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. You add one of the best tight ends ever in Rob Gronkowski. And yes, he's on the tail end of his career, but he's still very good. And he's had a year off to sort of rebuild the body a bit. It's hard not to be excited if you're a Tampa Bay fan.
What are your thoughts, Jason?
Well, I am a Tampa Bay fan, and so I am very excited. I do have my Rob Gronkowski jersey on order. We are very excited. No, I don't have a jersey on order. It's odd to me because I won't get a Brady jersey. He feels like a legend out of New England, but for some reason, I've always loved Gronk. George is a huge Gronk fan as a Miami Dolphin. I've always been a Gronk fan, so it feels like I do have to have a Gronk jersey. But no, super excited. I even like their fifth round Tyler Johnson pick out of Minnesota. I think he gets good separation. He's a good route runner. He doesn't have a lot of speed, but it that guy screams to me a Tom Brady wide receiver, just a guy that can break on a route and get open. They have three good wide receivers there, a couple of good tight ends. Their offensive line should be better. And like you said, their defense played very well at the end of last year. And now that defense isn't going to play with its back against the wall because not only pick sixes, which, you know, obviously lose you 7 points, but, you know, the interceptions that put you in a bad field position where all of a sudden you're in the red zone right as you trot onto the field. I really like the Bucs' chances this year, and I hope I'm not just
being the other thing, too, adding Gronk. You know, especially in goal line situations, you're going to go goal line package, or even if it's not in a goal line situation where you can just go two tight end sets and you throw Gronk and Cameron Brate out there, then it's like you got a shit ton of offensive linemen for those running backs back there. So, I mean, he's a very huge piece as far as a blocking tight end goes, and a lot of people fail to realize that because he is such a good pass catcher and a good route runner for a guy that's his size. I mean, when New England won that title a couple of years ago, Gronk came back from that injury. That offense shifted more as a run heavy scheme, and he was a very huge part of that run. You know, that whole situation, George, I mean, what are your thoughts with what's going on in Tampa Bay?
I think Tampa is pretty much all in for the next 2 years, at least. They're going to do anything they can the next 2 years to get another Super Bowl championship. I don't think they're playing the long game. It's all about right now. And the moves that they've made, I love the Tristan Wirfs pick. Jason and I were talking about that. And Jason was dying to get one of the top four offensive linemen in that draft. And he was so excited when they got him. But yeah, I'm not got a lot to add to what Jason and Mark said. I just think everything they're doing is all about the here and now for a championship run. And I think everything that they've done has made them the second best team in their division.
Well, listen, you have to say also, we got 2 years of Tom Brady, and then potentially we'll have the future Tampa Bay great Aaron Rodgers coming down to finish out his career, and we'll get 2 years of that, and then we'll take the next two of whatever players getting ready to retire. We could just keep this thing rolling year after year.
Or look, you know, Bill O'Brien might trade you guys Deshaun Watson.
A bag of balls.
Bag of balls and maybe a sub.
Rojo. Rojo for Deshaun Watson.
Might want Mike Evans in another year or two.
Rojo doesn't make enough money for Bill O'Brien to actually want him as a mediocre running back. Yeah.
That's good stuff there. So the Colts, they give Phillip Rivers another wide receiver and a running back in this draft. You know, they took Michael Pittman and they drafted Jonathan Taylor, which, you know, rest in peace, Marlon Mack, in my opinion, on that one. But yeah, you know, they're giving him some weapons. So they're playing for the now. I mean, they have an amazing offensive line. The defense is kind of middle of the pack. You know, they did draft an understudy, a quarterback, which we talked about him a little bit on the rookie show. I really don't see much from Eason in that situation, but he at least lands in a spot where he's with a head coach and a quarterback that he could really learn a few things from, kind of like, I mean, different level, but kind of like we were talking about with Winston earlier. But George, I'm going to kick this to you first. With the rookies that have been added to that team and you put Phillip Rivers in that situation, where do you see the Colts this season as opposed to last year?
Well, we discussed this the last show with Mark. I always thought the Colts – last year I thought the Colts were a playoff team. I think they're definitely a playoff team this year as long as everything, you know, breaks right and they remain healthy. They started out really good last year. They started out 5-2 in their first seven games. RIP Marlon Mack, I believe that to be correct. I don't know if it'll be right away, but over the course of the year, 100%, absolutely. I used to say I always want the starting running back in a Andrew Luck-led offense, and I think that's what made Marlon Mack really, really good. We've seen last year without Andrew Luck that he was just an average running back. Jonathan Taylor's not an average running back. I think he could do it all. He's a true three-down running back. He's going to be, in my opinion, I think right off the bat, he's a top 15 running back for me.
What about you, Jason?
Well, do we see Phillip Rivers as the guy from 2 years ago, or do we see him as the guy from last year? That's really kind of the question for me. He's behind a much better offensive line this year. He's got some weapons, but are his weapons now, even with the rookies, Jonathan Taylor's great. He's a rookie. Do we see his weapons better in Indianapolis than they were in San Diego? Because we all really like the wide receivers. And well, sorry, not San Diego, Los Angeles. My bad. I'm still playing from 2 years ago. But like, do we see his weapons as better now than they were in LA? I think
ultimately what helps him more than anything is that offensive line.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers, his entire time with the Chargers, whether San Diego or LA, he has not had an offensive line. They've given him weapons. He's had weapons, but he's always had to be the one to sling the ball quickly, and he's not a very mobile guy. He has cement feet. So having that offensive line is absolutely tremendous. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, fly up the charts as far as where he's going to finish as a quarterback in the league, but there are enough weapons there. Adding Pittman, adding Jonathan Taylor, you still have T.Y. Hilton, you know, Jack Doyle's there. You could look at probably a decent year from somebody like Mo Alie-Cox, you know, especially in red zone targets and whatnot. So the situation's different, but I think it's a benefit for him.
How could you leave out Trey Who? Burton?
Who? Yeah.
Right.
I was kind of upset he left out Nyheim Hines. You went with Trey Burton.
Oh, yeah, there's Nyheim Hines, too. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there are options there. I mean, with what they've added, Mark, what are you seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think the biggest thing here is the offensive line, because Rivers, you know, a couple of years ago, he was great when he was pressured. Back in 2018, when he was pressured, he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league. You know, you're looking at somebody with an adjusted completion percentage of 71.6%, which was top five according to PFF's numbers. And that fell to like 65.3%. So he went from fifth in the league to like 12th in the league last year because he couldn't handle pressure that well. And now he's going to be playing against, you know, behind a much better offensive line. I think the fact they brought Anthony Costanzo back for another year is going to be huge for them. And he's going to be in an offense that's predicated under Frank Reich's system about getting the ball out quickly, more of a West Coast system, yep. You know, Chargers more of a vertical downfield passing game. So I think this is a good situation for him. I think the Pittman pick is huge, you know, because he's a ball winner type on the outside with a big catch radius. He's going to perhaps free up some space for T.Y. Hilton. So I really like the situation that Rivers is in for the last couple of years of his career.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see. It's going to make that division a little more interesting and that conference as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, all these teams making playoff pushes. So it's definitely going to be a fun year. There's no doubt about that because there was a lot of movement. This was a very good rookie class. So, definitely going to be interesting. But speaking of rookies, let's jump into these guys. I mean, Joe Burrow went number one overall to the Bengals. I think we all saw that coming. As a whole, and they spent some time in free agency and in the draft, adding some pieces to that offense, to try and I guess, you know, make the guy feel a little bit more secure about coming there. You know, obviously Andy Dalton's out of the way. It doesn't seem like there's really a strong, situation at quarterback behind Joe Burrow. You know, we were talking about that earlier, the worst situations behind your starting quarterbacks. But it's definitely going to be fun to see. This is going to be, what, the second year for Zach Taylor there, I believe? Yep. Yeah, so this will be his second year there. So, I mean, with that situation there, Mark, what are you looking at?
I mean, I think in terms of what you want to see from Joe Burrow this year, you have to understand that a lot of how he fares is going to be determined over the next couple of months. Are we going to get a full training camp? Are we going to get a full slate of preseason games? Is it going to be abbreviated? How quickly can he get up to speed if it is abbreviated? And so, you know, this is still a team that I think they're going to struggle. I mean, they had the number one pick for a reason. And so they've made some additions. Burrow, obviously, T. Higgins was, I think, a very good pick for them. You know, some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball, Logan Wilson, the Wyoming linebacker I mentioned, I think he was a good pick for them in the third round. But they're probably a year away from being, like, really relevant. But I think for Burrow, he's in a situation where you have Higgins, you have Green, you have Mixon, you do have some weapons. He's somebody that has fared well when pressured. His ability to handle pressure in the pocket was one of the reasons he moved up draft boards, you know, this past season. And so he'll be okay. Like, I don't think we're going to see a massive rookie of the year type campaign from him, but I think he'll be in a situation where by week 16, week 17, he's going to be much better than he was week one, you know, whenever that happens. And so I'm excited to see how it unfolds for him. I think he's in a good offense for him, and I think he's got a good enough talent basis around him to have some success early on.
Yeah, absolutely. Another wide receiver I like too is Tyler Boyd, because that pushes him to the slot where he's the most successful. Oh, go ahead, Jason. Sorry.
Hey, Mark. Any worry? So he among the top prospects, he held onto the ball the second longest. Any worry behind that offensive line that he's going to try and do too much, hold the ball, get sacked a whole lot? That offensive line's atrocious. Yeah, they get their first round pick from last year back, but they didn't do anything to address any of the other positions. So,
yeah, Jason, it's a good question because look. You know, one of the things that if you had knocks on Burrow, it was, you know, that he sometimes took some crazy sacks and sometimes, like you said, held on to the ball a little bit too long. I think it was like 2.7 seconds snap to throw. You had some other guys in this class were in like the 2.3, 2.4 range. It certainly wasn't Jalen Hurts at 3.08, but it was on the higher side. But I think part of that was Burrow's ability to sort of create a little bit and extend plays with his legs where, you know, you look at the national championship game and the first play of that game when they're on offense, Isaiah Simmons blitzes from the slot. Burrow's sort of running around and evades Isaiah Simmons, runs away from him, and eventually finds Thaddeus Moss downfield and he throws a 40-yard strike. Like, I think some of those types of plays contributed to that. He's going to have to learn, though, you're not always going to be able to get away with that in the NFL. Like, it's one thing to run away from Isaiah Simmons. It's another thing when you're running away from the Von Millers of the world or the Miles Garretts of the world. Like, eventually, and it only takes one time, those guys are going to bury you. And so he'll have to learn in one of those situations to just throw it away, accept the fact that it's going to be an incompletion, accept the fact you might have to punt instead of, you know, converting the third down opportunity. And if he does that, he'll have a better year in the long run, because he'll protect himself, protect his body. But that is certainly something to watch.
Yeah, I look at these guys, and for especially rookie quarterbacks, like coming in, what is our expectation, not just of them, but of the team? And I don't know anybody that has really high expectations this year for the Bengals. I mean, if he goes out and they win, let's say they win five games, that's a two-game improvement over the year before. And B, you know, he's a rookie. He's going to learn a lot throughout this season. So it's not anything I would look forward to this year to judge him. Like, you can't judge, even though he's the number one overall pick, I wouldn't judge him as a success or a failure after 1 year. Like, there's a lot more there. I like the fact that the other quarterbacks we're going to talk about are probably not coming in to start right away, especially with the abbreviated preseason where we don't know if they're getting the OTAs. We don't know if they're going to be getting the preseason games, which are invaluable to rookies, especially rookie quarterbacks coming in. So my expectations for these rookies, especially rookie quarterbacks, are not a whole lot. If he goes out and they win five games, like if I'm the Bengals as an organization and Joe Burrow starts one way and then finishes as a completely different quarterback over the course of the year. Like, yeah, we won two more games, but his growth was more important. And for me as an organization, that's a win.
Absolutely. And you're talking about him going to learn a lot. He's going to learn a lot in that division too.
Yep.
With, especially with the Steelers and the Ravens that he's going to have to face twice a year. So going down to the next quarterback here, and I mean, Tua going to the Dolphins at number 5 overall. Love the pick. Saw that kind of, I mean, saw it developing. I mean, once you got past the Lions, which I didn't expect them to take him, I mean, Okuda was tied to the Lions for probably about 2 months, it seemed. But, you know, Tua landing in Miami really doesn't surprise me all that well. It's a good fit. Miami did a lot of things. I mean, I could go on and on, but I'm just going to hand this over to our resident Dolphins fan here, Georgia, and let him have his moment in the spotlight, and maybe his division rival Mark over there, you know, slap him a little bit.
So I absolutely love what Miami did last year. The whole thing, everybody was tank for Tua, tank for Tua, and nobody thought that we would get him when we won. I think we won 5 of the last 9 games. So the team started to buy in. We started playing better as the year went on. And a lot of people thought we played ourselves out of Tua contingency, which probably should have happened if he didn't get injured. Is there any question if he's not the number 1 or number 2 pick? Like, I think that hip injury was the only reason we got him. But, I mean, I'm so thrilled with that pick. We tanked for Tua, and then Miami went ahead and turned around and got tanks for Tua. They invested heavily in the offensive line. I think everything they did in that draft and in free agency was a win for Miami. I can't really see anything they did. They may have overpaid the corner from Dallas a little bit, but I'll take that if that's the only flaw they've done this offseason. And it's not going to be a win now situation with Miami. Everything that they're doing, the players they drafted are not going to come in and make huge impacts this year. It's more about next year and the year after and the year after. And I love it. I'm so happy. I am, for the first time since we've had Dan Marino, I believe we actually have a decent quarterback.
That's a hell of a window of time right there.
We shot ourselves in the foot big time when we decided to take the hometown Dante Culpepper over Drew Brees. And I'll never let Miami live that down. It hurts so bad to know we could have had Drew Brees. And we didn't want Drew Brees. We ended up going with Dante Culpepper.
What do you think, Mark?
Look, I wish I could disagree with all that. And like you said, sort of slap George upside the head. But I can't. I think if you're looking at teams and you take both free agency and the draft – put them together and say who will improve themselves. Look, Tampa Bay is one of them, and another Florida team is in that mix because you look at the fact they had a ton of salary cap space and they spent it, I think, pretty wisely. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they overpaid for Brian Jones, but I'm going to get into why I think that move made a lot of sense in a second. You add Kyle Van Noy, Shaq Lawson, you're adding pieces on the defensive side of the ball. You know, then you look at the draft, they had everybody, myself including, convinced that Tua would not be the pick. They had people convinced that they wouldn't even pick at 5. Like, by the time the draft kicked off, they were going to trade up to 2 to draft Josh Jones.
That was
like,
never happening.
Nobody knew what they were going to do. Like, but I mean, look, I was told down in Mobile during the Senior Bowl from somebody extremely close to the team that they didn't like Tua, that they were going with Justin Herbert. And like that smoke was always
– That was. It was. It absolutely was.
And they sat there. They drafted Tua at 5. They go Austin Jackson at 18. Okay, you know, bit of a question mark, but offensive tackle, I get it. You know, and then I think my favorite pick might have been Noah Igbinoghani, the cornerback from Auburn. Slide him right to the nickel spot. And this is what I love about what they did with Byron Jones, because now you have Howard Jones and Igbinoghani. And Brian Flores, like his mentor in Bill Belichick, likes to play matchups on the defensive side of the ball. Now you can do that. For example, I'm working on a piece for USA Today about, with the schedule release, some of the scheme things I'm most excited to see next year. I want to see that first Bills-Dolphins matchup because I want to see how Flores decides to defend John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Stephon Diggs, because now you've got 3 corners to match up against them with. If you're worried about Beasley and his change of direction skills, that might be why you drafted Noah Igbinoghani from Auburn. He might be the guy you put in the slot against him. But another week, you might be worried about somebody else, so you move him outside, and you might slide Byron Jones into the slot. You can play those matchups on the defensive side of the ball and not let the offense dictate matchups and then, you know, take advantage of them. So I love what Miami did just overall. I'm very impressed with how they've handled it. I think Brian Flores has gone into this sort of offseason saying, I want to build the kind of defense we had in New England. He goes out and he gets Kyle Van Noy, gets Shaq Lawson, who's going to be there, Trey Flowers. Now he can play some mismatches and matchups in the secondary. I love what they've done.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I talked about it on a couple shows that they just they've taken the right steps to build for the future, and they're going to be a contender here very shortly. I don't disagree with that whatsoever, especially if they keep doing the things that they're doing. Jason, you know, being a fan on the opposite side of a team there in Florida, I mean, other than just saying you hate everything that they're doing because you're a Bucks fan, what do you think about that situation in Miami, especially adding Tua and everything that they've done in the offseason?
Well, listen, I think Austin Jackson, I think we, and Mark's kind of alluded to it, was a bit of a reach with some of the other guys there. You know, with as many holes as they had, and I get what you're saying as far as having to cover three wide receivers, but they had such gaping needs. Like taking a third corner when you've just paid two of the top, the highest paid in the league, they have the money to do it, and I understand why you would do it. I with all the other needs they had and the talent that was still left on the board, like they still, who's their safety? Like who's their starting safeties next year? All the top safeties were on the board when they took a cornerback, and they already had two. I know what we're all talking about, like having a nickel corner is important. So if I had to nitpick there, those are the two things I would talk about. On the other hand, we led into this with the quarterback here. Going from college to the NFL is a huge downgrade at weapons for Tag, right? Like it's just he's going from prime veal to like eggplant parmesan here. Devontae's okay. He had one good year. Hopefully he can have another. Preston Williams is your number
love
two.
Preston Williams.
Right? Is Albert Wilson Williams, still?
Albert Wilson.
And I like him slot. Too. I'm not with the 980 picks, I would have loved to see like some of the wide receiver talent that was here go to the Dolphins. You know, you can't fault everything they did. They rebuilt their offensive line. They got a whole bunch of good defensive players. You know, nobody's expecting a lot out of Miami this year. You know, we were talking before the show, George, 8-8, 7-9 would be amazing for them. And then you still have a bunch of picks next year to put talent around your young quarterback. So, you know, it's not like you have to do it all in one season. If I had to nitpick, it's like I would have loved to see him take some of the talent that we all knew was in this draft on the offensive side from a skill
position. Yeah, but even in next year's draft, you know, even on both sides of the ball, whether it's safety or whether it's wide receiver, those classes are going to be deep too. So they're going to have the option to do it there. I mean, you're absolutely right. That team was there's just holes everywhere. I mean, they were Swiss cheese, but you know, they definitely did a good job plugging some of those up, going through all that. So the next quarterback that was taken off the board was Justin Herbert. He went number six overall to the Chargers. This is going to be an interesting marriage. This is going to be definitely an interesting situation. I don't know. We kind of talked about it in the rookie show. For Herbert, it was going to be the right system, right fit and scheme and all that for him. And I just really don't feel like this is the spot. There's opportunity there. He has weapons. Obviously, there's Keenan Allen. There's Mike Williams. They signed Austin Eckler. You still have Justin Jackson. They drafted Joshua Kelly, who very well could take that number two spot in the backfield. Then you still have Hunter Henry, but that offensive line is still terrible. So I don't feel like that's going to be the right spot for Herbert. And I think he's the kind of guy that's probably going to get in trouble fast. And he could be one that we see fizzle out quickly as well. I mean, what are your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of figure out the best sort of setting for Herbert. I thought Miami's offense might have been better because it was with Chan Gailey. You're going to see more of a spread influence, I think, here. With the questions about the offensive line, his struggles when pressured over the course of his career at Oregon, like that's a huge issue to worry about. You know, the benefit here is the fact that they do have Tyrod Taylor, and they seem sort of at least, I want to say, married to the idea of playing him at the start, but at least it seems like they're willing to sort of roll with Tyrod Taylor until there's a reason not to, you know, and whether it's you know, Taylor gets hurt or he struggles or whatever, you know, they could bring Herbert along slowly. But yeah, this feels like it is something, like you said, that could spin out of control. And the other thing is, look, Shane Steichen, their new offensive coordinator, he's a first time, you know, this is his first time as an offensive coordinator. He was an interim OC, you know, midway through last year. And so there's no real track record here of him, you know, developing quarterbacks. And so that's something to keep in mind as well. You know, I understand why they made the pick for Herbert. It makes sense, but they have to handle this the right way. Otherwise, it could turn south quickly.
What are your thoughts, Jason?
No, I completely agree. Like, he played what would be considered three tough games last year. He played Auburn, Utah, and Wisconsin, and he had two touchdowns, one interception in those combined in those three games. His level of competition that he played when he was successful was lower, right? He played well against bad teams. Well, you know, there's so much parity in the NFL. While there's bad teams, there's not, you know, Christian girls college level bad teams, right? Like, he's not playing Division IIA teams in the NFL. So, like, I do see him struggle. He has a big arm. He could be very good. And like Mark said, if he can sit for a year and learn. But like Mark also said, it's not like he's learning from a coaching staff that has a track record of bringing young quarterbacks along. So it's a not a great landing spot for a quarterback that really needed a good landing spot.
About you, George?
But the one thing I absolutely love is they're not going to be throwing Herbert right into the fire. They're going to let him sit. They're going to let him, you know, watch. And granted, it's Tyrod Taylor, but he is a starting caliber quarterback. He started before. He took the Bills to the playoffs. So he's been in the NFL for a while. He's got the experience. So being in the quarterback room with him will be a good thing for Herbert. And I don't think the Chargers should be in any hurry to get Herbert to start. I know if things start going bad, yeah, they'll get Herbert in there just because they're going to want to get him the experience. But I think it would do Herbert and the Chargers a ton of good to let Herbert sit for at least the first 12 games or so, just to learn the NFL and groom him up to get him ready versus just throwing him right in, you know, if they start slow. I agree with everything else everybody said. Herbert, I don't think he's ever going to be the guy that's going to lead your – I think I said that about him the last show we did. Herbert's not going to be the guy that leads you to a win, but he'll go out and manage the game just fine.
Yeah, that was a situation where – they could have taken a tackle, an offensive tackle, to draft your, you know, for your future quarterback that you're going to draft. I feel like they just rushed the situation to replace Phillip Rivers, but I guess we'll see how they, how that all turns out.
So if they didn't take Herbert, I'm almost curious what would have happened with him if they didn't. Like, how far would he have fallen? Would he have fallen to the point where the Packers would have traded up at 26 to take Herbert, or Would another quarterback possibly need a team traded up to get him? Like, how? Because after six, like, you start looking to see who's drafting. Maybe the Raiders take him. Maybe not. But after that, it's like, who knows where he goes? He could have been in for a huge fall.
Yeah, it's very hard to say. I just don't feel like that's going to be right for him. But we'll see. Yeah, Jordan Love go number 26 overall to the Packers, which, I mean, big surprise there. I mean, the immediate reaction from everybody is that, you know, Aaron Rodgers just got Brett Favre'd. And I mean, it's kind of hard to not look at it that way. If you look at what's left on Rodgers' contract and where they were last year and what they really could have added to that offense to kind of aid that situation, this was definitely not, I mean, them and the Eagles both didn't really do a whole lot to aid the things that these teams needed, and they both drafted a quarterback. I really don't know. I haven't seen a reaction from Rodgers yet. I'm very curious to what that reaction is going to be. I'm very curious as to, you know, the relationship in general there. I mean, it was rumored that he ran McCarthy out of there, and you know, you bring in LaFleur, and, you know, there was some conflict in the beginning with those guys and so on and so forth. So, I mean, is the organization putting pieces in play for the future or what? It's really hard to say. There, you could look at it a lot of different ways. But Mark, I'm going to kick it to you first, man. I mean, what do you make of that pick?
Yeah, I mean, in the heat of the moment, it was one of those wows, one of those stunner type picks. And I think a lot of us thought, look, this is a team that was a game away from a Super Bowl appearance, like drafting Jordan Love and trading up to go get him, even though they didn't give up a ton to make the move that they did. You know, how does that make you better in 2020 unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt? Like, he ideally, the guy doesn't see the field. I think sort of after ruminating on it a little bit, I almost wonder, and Michael Kist, my co-host on the newly named Quarterback Factory, which we could talk a little bit about in a few minutes here with Jalen Hurts, he sort of put this in my mind. It's like, do you think maybe the organization looks at what they did last year and thinks that perhaps they overachieved a bit? I mean, this is the team. Yeah, they get a first-round bye. They go 13-3. They make it to the NFC Championship game. But only three of their wins were against playoff teams. They swept the Vikings, and they beat Kansas City when Mahomes was hurt. Like, they had some bad losses. They got swept on the year by San Francisco. Like, maybe they just weren't really that good. Maybe they weren't really a team that was one win away from a Super Bowl. You know, they kind of overachieved. And if you draft a wide receiver like many thought, does that really help you? Or are they going down this sort of ball control, heavier personnel package role where they draft A.J. Dillon in the second round? They draft Josh Naguara from Cincinnati in the third round. And so I think they might look a lot different than we've seen Aaron Rodgers' offenses look in years past. And as far as Love specifically, like, from his perspective, this is an ideal scenario for him, you know, because he does need development. He does need time to sit. He does need time to figure things out. And he'll get that. Again, he won't see the field unless something crazy happens. So, you know, it's a stunner at first. I think there are ways that it can make sense. I still wouldn't have done it if I'm Green Bay. But if Love somehow pans out and becomes a 10-year good to great starter for them, this draft that we all graded with an F looks more like an A.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, the way I look at it is this was one of those rare deep quarterback classes that they were in a situation to do something like that. And it could, in the long run, make a whole lot of sense. George, what are your thoughts?
I think a lot of people forget that they were 13-3. I didn't remember how their record was last year. It's the first time I've had it worded to me like that, to where maybe they weren't really as good as their record says they were. And if that's the case, they eventually have to start looking to the future. Love's not going to see the field for a few years. So even if Aaron Rodgers is not the type of quarterback that's going to take him under his wing and groom him and teach him, he's still going to learn a ton. But just by being in the locker room with him, just by being in the, you know, the huddle with him, by being in the meetings with him, seeing how he approaches everything, seeing his intensity, you know, he's going to learn a lot just from that alone. I think nobody expected Love to be a starter this year. We all pretty much universally agreed, you know, he's a project quarterback. So while you do have Aaron Rodgers, yeah, back into his career, you know, he's got a solid contract for the next 2 years. He's not going anywhere. If you can spend those 2 years grooming Love and getting him to ready to where it's a post Aaron Rodgers quarterback, and you don't have to go searching for one or, you know, take a risk on one. If you could groom one for a couple of years, great. If not, I mean, you could probably turn around and trade Love for something, you know, not this year, I wouldn't, but maybe even next year. If, you know, a team comes calling, hey, you know, you've got Rodgers, we're interested in Love. You know, maybe possibly you flip him down the road a little bit. That's, you know, a possibility I've heard as well from a couple of people. But I love the pick. Tooting my own horn here again, I had said on Twitter that I thought Green Bay should take a quarterback here, but they won't. And sure enough, they absolutely did. I love it. I think I wish more teams would actually do this right here. Draft a quarterback and let them sit in your roster, you know, for 2 years as a replacement for your starter when you know you've got an aging starter who's on the back end of his career.
Oh, we've seen the success of it a few times. Jason, what are your thoughts? They used to
do it all the time.
So for the quarterback, for Love himself, it's a great move. For the team, it's interesting. I mean, it's something that they've done since they drafted Rodgers, right? He's the only skill position they've drafted in the first round since, you know, ever since they drafted him. I guess my question is who's their third wide receiver? Is it MVS? Lazard? Do we know who the third guy is that he's throwing the ball to? I mean, Aaron, let's take Aaron Jones out of it. Who's their third wide receiver?
Probably going to be MBS. It could be. Yeah. I don't know if Equinemius St. Brown is still on the roster, but it most likely is probably going to be MVS.
So, I mean, just quickly listening to it, other than throwing out MVS, who wasn't very good last year, and Lazard, who had an okay season for what he was, like, they don't have weapons there. They drafted another running back when they had at least one good one on the roster, and they are going ground and pound. So, to Mark's point, that may be what they want, but, you know, if you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers who's trying to compete at the end of his career, and they were 13-3, and they were the biggest fraud in the NFL last year, like Mark said, they lost some bad games down the stretch where you just looked at them and said, how are you guys 13-3? And then you looked at their schedule and you went, oh, okay, that's how. But, you know, I do feel for Aaron Rodgers because, again, he goes into the season throwing to Adams and then a whole bunch of also-rans, guys that would be bit players on other teams at best. So for the rookie, for Love, I love the position. I love going to a franchise like Green Bay. I love that he can sit for a couple of years and fix some of his problems. You know, he had a terrible QB rating against any winning team last year that he played. So it's not like he's even close to coming in and being ready. Unlike Rodgers, when he was drafted, you know, Rodgers was considered the number 1A of that draft. Love is definitely not considered anywhere near there. So it's good for him. He's going to get to sit 2 or 3 years. I just feel bad for one of the best quarterbacks I've seen in my lifetime, yet again not getting weapons that he needs to make himself successful.
Yeah, I don't know. I see the top four wide receivers obviously being Adams, and then you're going to have Lazard, you're going to have MVS, and then probably Coomer will be in there. EQ will probably be gone, but, you know, as far as the A.J. Dillon pick goes, I mean, I think that's kind of helping them plan for after this season when Jones and Williams are going to be our free agents, so it's just going to give them some options.
Hey, Jason, can you do me a favor? Aaron Rodgers has made $219 million in his career. Please do not feel bad for that man.
I mean, listen, so there's the money you make and then the fire.
I understand that, but don't feel bad for that man. He's been heavily compensated for many, many years. You can wish something, but just don't pity the guy, okay? I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he has a lot of money and won a Super Bowl already. So we're going to round this thing out with the Jalen Hurts pick here. I mean, we could look at Eason and Fromm and then Anthony Gordon. He was an undrafted free agent signing with the Seahawks. That's kind of intriguing, but just for time's sake, we'll round this out with Jalen Hurts. He was picked 53rd overall to the Eagles. Was kind of another surprise. You know, again, initial reactions from the world is, you know, what are they really doing there? You know, they signed Wentz to a long-term deal. I think they actually have a potential out on Wentz after 2022.
Yeah.
So, you know, Hurts is another one that would have to develop. I'm not super sold on him, and we talked about that, and some good points were brought up on the pre-draft show. But, yeah, you know, and Wentz is often hurt. You know, we saw a full regular season out of him in the first couple snaps. And the playoff game last year, he went down with a concussion. But he's never been able to really, truly get through a season. So the Hurts pick was definitely interesting as well. And Mark, I'm going to kick this to you first.
Yeah, I mean, this was a bit of a shock. As I alluded to earlier, I co-host a podcast on Bleeding Green Radio. It used to be called the QB Sco Show. We had to rename it the QB Factory after what Howie Roseman called the Eagles. When the pick was made, I hopped on with my co-host Michael Kist on Instagram Live, and the comments were just Eagles fans just despondent over what they had done. I think my favorite video that I saw on Twitter after night two was a Eagles fan. When the pick's being announced, it's one of those moments where you get up from the chair, you like pace in the room, you like lock in on the TV and you hear, you know, Jalen Hurts quarterback, and he rips his hat off and fires it towards the camera. He's like, what the? And before he drops the F-bomb, it cuts to the Gandhi and pallbearers, you know, that video, that meme. where they're like dancing with the coffin. I'll dig it up and send it to you guys. It was one of my
favorite. I know exactly what you're talking about.
One of my favorite things. I've probably watched it like 18 times, just over and over. It's so great. Because Eagles fans were just beside themselves.
They had the same reaction as Giants fans had last year with Daniel Jones.
I think the more and similar, I've had sort of a epiphany of sorts on the Hurts pick, especially when you look at the other moves they've made around the quarterback position and some of the comments made by Roseman and Peterson after the draft and during the draft. Jalen Reagor, he's a good West Coast fit, right? Doug Peterson off the West Coast offense, Andy Reid tree. But then, you know, you add John Hightower, the Boise State wide receiver, a vertical threat guy, Quez Watkins from Southern Mississippi, another vertical threat type guy. They're talking about how they want to be more of a downfield team. They're talking about how Wentz likes to throw it downfield. They add Marquise Goodwin, you know, they trade for him, another speed burner guy. They want to be a more downfield team. And if there's a strength that I think Jalen Hurts has as a passer, again, 3.08 seconds snap to finish last year, the only quarterback in last year's draft class above 3 seconds and the only one above 2.75. It's the downfield stuff. And so they're looking at being more of a downfield passing team. They think that fits Wentz as well. And they looked at Hurts as a guy that's maybe the best downfield passer that was available at that point in the draft. Do I think still you do it at 53? It does still seem too early. They had other needs. They needed to draft a linebacker, and they did that with Davion Taylor, who played 1.5 games of high school football, you know, because his family grew up Seventh-day Adventist. So sundown Friday night, you go home, you worship. And he's a massive project. And interestingly enough, Jalen Reagor, Jalen Hurts, and Davion Jalen, that's his middle name, Taylor. Like, they had an all Jalen first day of the draft. And it's all very odd, but I think that's the way to sort of rationalize it. They wanted to look at becoming more of a downfield offense. Hurts sort of fits that. Wentz does get hurt. Nate Sudfeld, he's okay, but they looked at this situation and said Hurts is probably the best fit for us if we're going to move in this direction at the quarterback spot at this point in the draft.
With him, he does throw well downfield. He has great touchdown field more than he does shorter intermediate. Jason, what are your thoughts, man?
Well, first, I just want to see if Mark thinks Doug Peterson might have thought it was a Superflex league.
It might have been a situation where he's like, look, or they're going to play two quarterbacks. They're going to have like that Princeton offense from a couple of years ago where they had three quarterbacks on the field at a time. They were just like, yeah, we could do it, right? We'll just run Philly special all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a surprise. Here, though, I think specifically with Wentz being so injury-prone – and Nick Foles moving on, and they don't really have much of a they didn't really have much of a backup. It makes sense in the way that it's a very similar style down the field kind of guy. So it makes sense in that way. But again, they had needs all over the field. You know, we laugh about Jordan Howard sometimes leaving, but you know, that was a guy who got a lot of run last year for that team. They didn't really replace him, so now they're sticking mostly with Miles Sanders and then a couple of guys who were undrafted free agents, right? Like, so, you know, they could have used another running back there after letting Howard walk. So it is interesting that they did draft Hurts, but I get it from a point of view, like, you know, a couple of years ago, the backup quarterback in Philly's Super Bowl MVP, right? So it's not a bad spot to be as a backup in Philadelphia.
What say you, George?
Well, and I keep referring to the last show we did with Mark. The last show we said that, you know, Jalen Hurts is going to have to go to a team where he's not going to be the starter right away. It's probably going to take an injury for him to be able to get on the field. We didn't know we were describing Philadelphia at that time, but we were. I don't buy the whole contract for Carson Wentz. If he goes out this year and he gets hurt again, and they have to have Jalen Hurts come in and play, and he comes in and plays well, I think they could probably trade that contract that they gave Carson Wentz. I mean, we just seen the Jaguars trade Nick Foles after giving him a 4-year, $88 million contract. So those contracts are only worth the paper they're written on. Just because it's a lot of money does not mean that the players cannot be traded. Who would have thought David Johnson would have got traded this offseason? Nobody. Why? because of the contract.
Bill O'Brien.
Well, that's true too, but it was largely because of the contract. Like, nobody's going to take on that contract. Guess what? They only need one person to take on Carson Wentz's contract. And there will be a team out there that would be willing to take on that contract if it was for the right price. I think it was a smart move. I've been a huge fan of Jalen Hurts for the last couple of years. I love his mental toughness. He's going to fit right in with that Philadelphia mentality that they have in Philadelphia. Just you come in and you go to work. And that is Jalen Hurts to a T. He's going to come in. He's going to go to work. He's going to win over that locker room real fast. Not saying he's going to win it over and take Carson Wentz's job from him. He would need an injury for that to happen. But his teammates are going to come in, are going to love his attitude when he gets there, because he's going to come in and just want to go to work. He's not flashy. He's not there to you know, look at me. He's just going to come in, put his head down, and go to work. And they're going to love that about him.
Sounds good. Sounds like he's going to work. I like it.
We're all putting in some work tonight.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna go ahead and wrap this up here, guys. This was definitely fun. Mark, you know, thanks for coming on again. This was definitely a blast, and you know, I kind of want to give you a second here to take the floor. I know you said you were working on something for USA Today, but you know, whatever it is you're working on, man, I mean, throw it out there. What do you got going on?
Well, guys, thanks so much again for having me on. Had a blast on both of these times. Look forward to hopping on again with you guys, you know, whenever we can do it soon. Definitely, I just sent George the video. It's in the DMs. You can see it, of that Philly fan just losing his mind. It's so good. As far as what I'm doing right now, I dropped a piece on USA Today today about the games I'm most excited about watching, not the schedule get released. I'm going to have a piece up sometime tomorrow about the games that I'm most excited to see from a sort of schematic standpoint. Earlier this week, I talked about the J.K. Dobbins pick and how, you know, that sort of divided the football world. Analytics Twitter seemed to be against it, so I made their case. Sort of football Twitter seemed to be for it. I made that case, and I sort of rendered a bit of a verdict. You can check that piece out as well. But the easiest way to find me is on Twitter, at Mark Schofield.
So bringing up Dobbins' pick, what do you think about that?
Well, I think, look, there's certainly a case to be made that, you know, the expenditure of the 55th pick in the draft on a running back is a poor use of draft capital. You know, however you want to look at it, EPA or success rate, like the passing game is king. I mean, you could look at some of the EPA numbers from last year and the Tennessee Titans, who rode their running game to the AFC championship game. Ryan Tannehill was still more effective for them on an expected points added per play basis than Derrick Henry was. And so you could make a strong case that, you know, even if you just wanted to help the running game, and Baltimore is a run-based team, that they could have drafted a guard. You know, they could have done something else at 55 or addressed a different position and gotten a running back later. But on the other side of that argument is the fact that, you know, for people who were saying, you know, maybe they should have gone wide receiver. There were good wide receivers on the board. You could have added a wide receiver. They drafted Hollywood Brown in the first round last year, and they drafted Miles Boykin in the third round. And they're a team that is not like an 11 personnel team. They ran it 43% of the time, and only six teams ran it less than them. And so the fact that they don't, you know, running back two is probably more of a need for them than wide receiver three or four. And especially when you look at the fact that, you know, you can make the case that drafted running backs early is a poor investment of draft capital. Okay. It's not like they're giving them a massive contract. Like, it's better that they draft a replacement for Mark Ingram than give him a new deal. Like, they can get out from Mark Ingram's deal before paying him $5 million per year next year.
Yep.
They're going to be paying J.K. Dobbins $610,000. That will be his base salary. And so I think there is still sort of a analytical way of looking at the selection. And we know the Ravens are an analytically minded team. Like, they've got a guy who was a behavioral economics major in college sitting next to Greg Roman in the booth, telling him when to go for it on fourth down. Like, they've thought this through. So, you know, it's just a lot of the sort of analytics members of football Twitter love the Ravens because of their pro analytics approach. And so it took a lot of people by surprise, but I still think if you dive into it a little deeper than just saying why'd they draft a running back early, I think there's an argument to be made that it wasn't really a bad expenditure of draft capital. But my mentions were a nightmare for yesterday afternoon, so that's fine.
That's funny.
Yeah. We love Twitter.
What would we do without it?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
I'd be sane. TikTok. Yes. I'm going to get on TikTok. Do some Switch videos with my wife or something.
Yeah, there you go. So, George, before we jump off, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BFTGpod.
Jason?
And you can find me on Twitter at BFTGJason.
And myself, you can find me at SBAC21 and SleeperWire Show at SleeperWire Show. So make sure you guys are going on there, following everybody, especially Mark. I mean, you guys are going to get a lot of good insight from him as well. You know, and again, as I said in the beginning of the show, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you guys enjoy your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to the SleeperWire Show so you're getting all the latest content. We have a whole lot more that's going to be coming out through the off season before we're hitting it heavy in season again. So unless you guys have anything you want to add, until the next time you guys hear us, have a good one.